This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Coming up on the Beltway Blitz, we will talk Nats baseball with Charlie Slows, college football with Jason Staples, and the Commanders with our buddy Kevin Sheehan.
We, Grant and Danny, we're exclusively brought to you by the law firm of Condori and Morad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Let's get to the Beltway Blitz right now and start on the diamond. Charlie Slows on the call. Nats baseball tonight with Dave Jagler. 6:15 pregame, 6:45 first pitch. Charlie, how about Andrew Alvarez's debut? Not much of a prospect, not a guy that has high expectations moving forward, but he pitched, add, subtracted, located. That's what it's supposed to look like yesterday.
Absolutely. A guy who did not start the year well, but had been coming on, and so he was the guy that deserved the chance to show himself in the big leagues with Mackenzie Gore on the injured list. And that was really nice to see. We heard he had a couple of different spins and looks on a breaking ball. So we saw that, and he had great command, threw strikes, and is exactly what they had hoped he would do. And he did it over five innings and left us all wanting more.
Speaking of Mackenzie Gore, what's the latest on him? How is he in his recovery?
Well, he's thrown now 3 days in a row. So, you know, they shut him down for a few days, and now he's been playing catch. I mean, that's a really good sign. You see a guy go on the injured list with inflammation, and you're thinking, well, guy's going to be shut down, so how could he make it back in 2 weeks' time? But, you know, we'll see when he gets on a mound and throws a bullpen. That's when you really know. But so far, so good.
It's been just a disastrous year, not just at the major league level, but at the minor league level as well. Travis Sakura, Tommy John, we're still awaiting word on Harleen Susana's MRI, but the other top pitching prospect's been shut down with the same ailment that led to TJ for Sakura. I'm wondering, specific to Susana, like what you guys have been hearing and what the timeline would be on figuring out more on that injury.
Well, we haven't heard anything yet. We're waiting for the same information that you are at this point. So, you know, hold your breath. Unfortunately, there's just so many of these UCL injuries, and, you know, he had a UCL strain earlier in the year. Hopefully this isn't related to that, and that isn't something that will, you know, shut him down and put him on, you know, surgery for anything like that. So, yeah, it's been a lot of injuries. You know, you lost the core to the hip surgery, or he would have been in big league camp, and you hope you're going to have him back at some point. You know, and then the other injuries, you didn't foresee DJ Hurz in spring training, waiting a long time for Cade Cavalli to get here, and looking forward to seeing him pitch again tonight. You know, you look at Josiah Gray, probably not at this point, just throwing bullpens to where he's started to face live hitters. I don't know if there's enough time for him to make it back to make a big league appearance before the year's over. That remains to be seen. And, you know, Trevor Williams, he had the internal brace procedure. He signed through next year. He thinks he's going to be ready for a regular spring training because he didn't have the full-blown Tommy John surgery. So we'll see. You know, that's going to be something you're going to have to address, and other pitchers who they may bring in the offseason. But certainly, you know, the depth that they thought they had in spring training this year, you know, disappeared very quickly.
Charlie, long-term big picture, I don't have many concerns. James Wood is wonderful, and, he's somebody to build around. But sort of looking at it, leads the major leagues in strikeouts. Second half of the season, two homers, hitting .208, getting on base at a .291 clip, and only slugging .325 for an OPS of .615, dramatically below all of his numbers from the first half of the season. Doesn't look real comfortable at the plate, as I, you know, we just talked about, striking out a ton. Just, it doesn't look quite the same. I know it's hard when you're number one on the scouting report, but how do they get him going, and what are you seeing?
Well, you know, it was, like you said, a complete opposite of the first half. He didn't chase pitches out of the strike zone. Normally, there were fastballs there. Those were the ones that he would hit. He's taken a lot of fastballs for strikes, particularly bottom of the zone, and he's chased pitches out of the strike zone. It's like he lost that terrific eye that he had that we saw when he came up last year and through the first half when he was a dominating offensive force. And, you know, you hope that it was just a slump that would last a month, but, you know, it's carried on to this point through the second half, and it's, you know, something that, you know, he's going to have to figure out. Maybe he's had his sophomore jinx in the second half of this year, which would have been like the beginning of his second year, figuring last year he played a half a season. Maybe that came in the second half of the season, and he'll figure it out. But certainly, you know, you didn't see him at the midway point of the year, you know, at this pace. I mean, you're talking about threatening the Major League strikeout record.
Charlie, three really good outings in a row for Cade Cavalli to start his season. And then last time out at Yankee Stadium, he was knocked out of the game in the third inning, 8 hits and 7 earned runs. It was really rough. What went wrong in that game, and how does he get back going well this evening as he's on the mound against the Marlins?
Well, he wasn't alone. Everyone got knocked around in that series by the Yankees, who suddenly became red hot. You know, again, like everybody else who struggled and got hit, if you live in the middle of the plate, big league hitters are going to, really good big league hitters with power are going to take advantage of that. And that's, you know, what we have seen over the course of the season. You watch a guy like Andrew Alvarez yesterday, and the Marlins, you know, they don't score a lot of runs, but they hit for average. They get a lot of hits, but he stayed out of the middle of the plate. They didn't make good contact against him. And, you know, as a pitching staff, the rotation when they struggle is when they're right in the middle of the plate, and that's anybody. Gore, Irvin has given up major league leading home run total. Parker, it's all the same thing. It's the middle of the plate. Middle of the plate with your fastball, middle of the plate with your breaking ball, middle of the plate with a changeup up. You're going to get hit.
Charlie, flip side, this bullpen all of a sudden isn't just, you know, getting better for here. They're good for anybody. I think they'll have the fewest base runners in Major League Baseball among bullpens over the last handful of games played, where they've been electric here. I think it was 9 scoreless innings over 2 nights against 2 different opponents. These guys are settling into roles. You're seeing some pitchers pitch pretty damn well out of this pen.
Yeah, considering, you know, you've rebuilt the bullpen a lot over the course of the season, the changes that you're made, and, you know, trying to find people can consistently get outs. And yesterday was a chance, really, the first time in a while, to protect a lead. They haven't had a chance to do that. Jose Ferrer has not had regular work in that closer's role. He was in there yesterday. You saw Cole Henry in the 8th, and, you know, Beater, they picked up for the Yankees, the Rosario trade. His MO in the past have been a lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts. When he's on, he's going to strike out a lot of people. And he did that. And, you know, some of the other guys, Pilkington and Poulin, who was ironically the guy that the Tigers had a DFA because they needed a 40-man roster spot for Kyle Finnegan, and the Nationals claimed it on waivers, has done a really nice job as a left-hander out of the bullpen. So certainly put him in the position to someone you consider to be in this spot next year.
Charlie, thank you. Good catching up. We'll listen tonight.
All right, guys. Always good to talk to you.
Be good, brother.
See you, buddy.
Charlie Slows. Charlie and Dave, 6:15 pregame. A little over 2 hours from right now on the Fan. Nats Marlins tonight at 6:45. All right, let's talk college football. Virginia Tech loses to South Carolina in their season opener, 24-11. The number 10 ranked Gamecocks. Look, I didn't think this would be an overly competitive game, so I give Virginia Tech a lot of credit, Danny. Their defense was actually awesome. The problem is this offense is not any better, it doesn't seem like, and I now have major concerns at quarterback with Kyren Drones. I know you don't play South Carolina every week. I get that you leveled up and played a varsity SEC team, but that was not a good look in week one for a head coach in Brent Pry, who's, you know, on a hot seat. And it's getting hotter.
Yeah, as you said, the strength of opponent won't be the same. Vanderbilt's frisky. We've seen them. You know, they're probably a better team, should be favored in that one. But then it softens up with Old Dominion, Wofford, NC State, Wake, Georgia Tech, Cal, Louisville. No juggernauts in there until maybe you get to Florida State, Miami down the stretch of the season. So there's still a chance to kind of turn things around. It boded well, I thought, defensively, that this is kind of that old school Virginia Tech, how they might have to play, right? Grind it out, make a special teams play, some beamer ball type stuff. But I'm with you. The ceiling there offensively in this modern era of college football just isn't there.
Elsewhere, the Maryland Terrapins locally got a 39-7 win over Florida Atlantic this weekend. Big second quarter was the difference. It was 7-7 after one. They committed a million penalties right out of the chute. I believe they had something crazy like 11 penalties and 9 in the first half. Those were the numbers that are standing out as I think back. But They outscored Florida Atlantic 26-0 in the second quarter. In fact, the Owls did not score after the early part of the ball game, and that's when Maryland pulled away. It was not pretty early, but they did plenty to bury a bad team. Malik Washington, the freshman quarterback, he's the big story here. Debut, completed 27 passes for 258 yards and 3 touchdowns. I thought he was going to be a little bit more of a runner, and based on what I saw this weekend, and we'll see if he can run more, he just stood in the pocket. You know, cinder block footed, I mean that positively, just statuesque, stood there, made all the throws. He's a huge guy, by the way, 6'5", super intriguing prospect.
Well, you could see, I mean, there's obviously different situations, okay? So you look at Ohio State, for example, with Justin Sayin, where they're going, you're not going to be the reason we lose, and if we win, it's everybody else has a hand in it, right? Some of these guys making their debuts, you think of, you know, Simpson for Alabama, they kind of didn't put a ton on his plate right away. Not the case with Washington. I think it was 30-some pass attempts in the first half where they're going, you got the keys, dude. We're going as far as you take us, which I love against a softer opponent. Get him some experience that way, but they got a dynamic player there.
Rank these three duds from the weekend in college football in order from most to least discouraging, I guess. Arch Manning, Bill Belichick, and Alabama.
Ooh, okay.
Which one was like, that's okay to, oh my God, they're in big trouble?
Bill Belichick is in the most trouble. Okay. So that's number one. They're going to be dog water.
See, I think Alabama's in the most trouble because I think their schedule and the expectations there, like North Carolina's got no players. Who cares if Bill Belichick and North Carolina aren't any good? Alabama, Kalen DeBoer's going to get run out of there with his head on a platter if they can't turn it around.
He might. Well, UNC can't fire Bill Belichick because that was their grand move. That was like the three-dimensional chess piece. We'll get the greatest coach of all time. And you got to wonder if maybe something passed him by. But yes, for Texas, Arch Manning, they'll be back. They'll be okay.
Yeah, they're not going to play Ohio State every single week, but he's got to look better for sure. I mentioned it earlier, but the most off-target throws in terms of percentage of passes in a game by a Texas quarterback in over a decade, it was an ugly start for him. All right, let's keep it moving on the Blitz. Kevin Sheehan joins us now. Kevin, we appreciate you, buddy. It is a game week, finally, for the Commanders. What's your early feel on Commanders-Giants?
Belichick 1, DeBoer 2, Arch Manning 3. It's so funny. I was just talking about that with somebody. Like, two of the best stories going into the weekend turned so critically negative, Arch Manning and Belichick in particular. But you're right. I mean, DeBoer, one game into year two, and they're ready to run him out of Tuscaloosa. What was your question? Sorry.
Commanders, Giants, early feel.
God, week one is always so hard. And I always think you look back on week one and you're like, we learned nothing about these teams in week one. We barely learn anything about these teams in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. I don't know. The Giants have a good roster. You know, the quarterback is the question mark. And if Russell Wilson can be better than Daniel Jones and Tommy DeVito and Drew Locke have been in recent years, I actually think that they're not a terrible team. Defensively, they can be nasty this year, really nasty, and could be kind of a pesky outfit for a lot of people. I think it could be a tight game, but I think the best player on the field is on our team, and he plays quarterback, and somehow they'll pull out, you know, the season opener. But I'm not expecting a cover necessarily.
Yeah, that's the drum I've been beating, is I care more about previous year samples when it's a division rival than I do kind of in general, Kevin. I know the roster's changed so much, et cetera, but for whatever reason, Washington didn't really seem to play like Washington against the Giants. These games are rock fights. Last year, New York probably should have won the first one. Malik Nabers with a drop, and their kicker had a pulled muscle, which is why he was in a position to drop it in the first place. And the second game was again, an awkward kind of one-score game, very old-school NFC East. I'm a little worried just because I didn't see a lot of great sample in the preseason heading into this one. I feel like everybody's kind of got their eyeballs on another NFC title game appearance without some of the work that goes into it. What's your sense of where the team is, their preparation, et cetera, given how little we saw in the preseason?
I mean, I don't know where they'll be on Sunday, but I feel confident that this is going to be a really good offensive team. I mean, you start with, obviously, Jaden, and when you have someone like that at quarterback, you're rarely a bad offensive team or even an average offensive team. So I think they're going to be really good offensively, and I think the mystery is defense. Did they improve? Can they stop the run? You know, on paper, the schedule's a lot tougher. You don't know what it'll look like when you get there, but not only really good quarterbacks, excellent running backs, And the, you know, the primary way, we used to say this about, you know, our team playing other teams, but the way to beat Washington is to keep Jaden Daniels off the field and to limit the possessions. That'll be like a key every Sunday for the opponent playing Washington, is don't give that offense, you know, 11, 12, 13 possessions in the game where you're going to give up 30-plus points. And if teams can run the football like they did last year, that's, you know, that's a formula for keeping it close and potentially winning.
Kevin Sheehan of the Kevin Sheehan Show with us on Grant and Danny. Kevin, how about, you know, looking at the defensive side of the ball for a moment, do you have any concerns about where the pass rush is coming from? Do you think they'll have enough of that? And then are you buying what a lot of us are selling, which is that the secondary and particularly corner play should be better?
Yeah, I mean, man, that seems to be the area in which there seems to be a lot of optimism. I'm not going to buy it until I see it, because rookie corners rarely end up contributing a lot as rookies. It's an experienced position. You know, the Pat Surtans and the Sauce Gardners of the world, and even Mikey Sanders still last year, they're the, you know, the exception to the rule. So I know everybody is super high in Trey Amos. I had Smoot on the show last week. He's like, you know, he's as good as I've ever seen. Sean Springs, who doesn't get excited about anything, said he's ready right now. Well, if he is, Springs actually told me they're going to throw it at Lattimore, not at Amos. Then, you know, let's go have ourselves a defensive secondary season. But I'd like to see it first. I am confident in Quan Martin. I thought he was a good player last year, who got better as the year went on. And I think Sandra still, you know, only takes a step forward. He's too smart, you know, and too good to take a step backward. But, yeah, pass rush, Dorrance Armstrong. How about that as a name, as a guy that will play well this year? I thought he played really well at the end of last year.
When do you expect Terry McLaurin to be full Terry McLaurin?
I hope Sunday. Isn't it, you know, a week and a half, close to 2 weeks, enough time to be ready? There isn't any indication yet that his snap count's going to be limited or his workload's going to be diminished. I would hope that we'd see a lot of what we saw last year from Terry week one.
Kevin, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Enjoy week one.
All right, boys.
There's Kevin Sheehan. We're Grant and Danny. That is our Beltway Blitz. So during this blitz over the last 20 minutes, the Commanders actually put out their first depth chart, and there's actually a handful of really interesting things on there that I want to go into. I try not to make a lot out of preseason depth charts. This still qualifies as that. But I'm actually intrigued by a couple of things that they listed that I didn't think they would. And we'll get to that next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thanks to Toby for the update. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. So let's go through some of the interesting developments from this unofficial depth chart. And again, my caveat and my prereq to this conversation is always, these things don't mean a ton, I don't think, but there's a few things they did here that are actually really surprising to me. The first is we have our answer, oddly enough, on right tackle. They did not list Connerly slash Wiley. They did not list Andrew Wiley as a first-team right tackle at all. In fact, he's not even listed as the backup of the position. They listed him at guard. And so when they say Allegretti or Wiley at right guard, that tells you Josh Connerly is going to be their starting right tackle this weekend against the Giants, and that he's going to play every single down. And why that's interesting is you and I have discussed the idea that last year there was this rotation with Brandon Coleman, and I think it was actually Wiley on the left side, at the start of last season. And those two guys on a series-by-series basis went back and forth, and eventually, after a couple of weeks, Coleman ended up taking the job and running with and Wiley moved it to another position. There was some thought that that would happen again with Josh Connerly, but they've clearly seen enough in a couple preseason games and as the most improved player from day one to the final day of training camp that Josh Connerly is going to be the right tackle who will be thrown into the deep end against the Giants to sink or swim.
Yeah, so that's obviously the point one that's interesting. Point two, or maybe it's a little bit further down in import, I can't remember an or on many depth charts that I've read. I thought that was really interesting, that it's Allegretti or Wiley. Eh, who's to say? But obviously less important than the rookie first-round pick taking the job.
At the start of the year, they've done that a bunch where they're like, quote-unquote, not still sorting things out, right? Like, I've seen the or between the two where they don't want to announce yet who's starting, and there's a competition or something going on because they don't have to necessarily.
Right, there's no requirement to.
But I thought it would look like that at right tackle. And the fact that it doesn't actually answer.
I thought there'd be a slash in there,
I'd be surprised if it's not Wiley then, because remember, they don't really have a backup center. Nick Allegretti's the backup center. They didn't keep another one on the 53-man roster. So unless they elevate Michael Dieter from the practice squad on game day, then Allegretti's your only center other than Biadasz on the roster, which means he's got to be available and ready to come onto the field. And you keep working back from that, that means that Andrew Wiley would play guard, not Nick Allegretti. And that Allegretti could be there to practice and get ready on the sideline, doing snaps and whatever as a center. You don't want to make two changes instead of one. So my guess is they've answered the big question that we had on the line. Andrew Wiley at right guard, Josh Connerly at right tackle. Left to center, you've got Tunsil, Coleman, and Biadasz. And then Allegretti will be the backup at basically two or three positions.
That was the biggest thing that we were trying to figure out. It's also what you hope for, right? I mean, that's your best case scenario until Sam Cosmi comes back. And hopefully is Sam Cosmi, they give enough time to do that. But if the rookie isn't ready, no harm, no foul. That's totally reasonable and normal to go from, doing it in whatever the Pac-8 or whatever conference Oregon's in now to doing it in the show, the highest level we got. You could take a couple of weeks, a month, et cetera. It's not like he was picked second or third overall. But the fact is, he looked the part by, certain reps in even that first preseason game where he's out in space, he's engaging with one guy and then finding a way to get into the second level just because of how, athletic and quick he is. And you could sort of see the growth just from that, just in the brief little sample that we got, let alone folks that were out of practice, which you guys got to see. But he certainly looks the part, and that was the biggest variable. If he wasn't quite ready, that moved a couple different dominoes around. Now that he is, he's anchored there. You sort of figure out the rest because those other three spots from the center on over were pretty much already set.
Jalen Lane, the rookie from Virginia Tech, is your punt returner. That is not a surprise. He was returning a bunch of punts in the preseason. And I think when they drafted him, if you go back all the way to April on our show and everywhere, that was kind of the expectation. He was an exceptional punt returner with the Hokies, and that was going to be how he cut his teeth in the league early. And that's what's going to happen. He's going to return punts, whether he plays or not on offense at all early on, is to be determined. But he's going to be their punt returner. Here's what I am very interested in, though. Deebo Samuel's listed as their kick returner. Now, he returned 48 kicks last season for San Francisco. I don't even remember him returning kicks for the 49ers, but obviously that was the case. Teams are valuing kick returning more the last couple seasons than they did before, where they would just put whoever their backup running back or their last wide receiver in or whatever. Now, because the play is set up a little bit more like an offensive play with actual design blocks and the way that the kicks are being returned, because if you put it into the end zone where the possession starts is too damaging, you're going to get a chance to return the football. It's just an opportunity basically to whose hands do you want the ball in space on your team? And for Washington last year, that was Austin Ekeler, who, if you remember, returned the opening kick at Northwest Stadium for a touchdown. It got called back via penalty. This year, it's going to be Deebo Samuel. So after 48 kick returns last season in 2024 and going back to 2023, 25 that year, and then the year before that in 2022, just three kick returns, you've seen his import go up in that role as more and more kicks get returned. Washington is going into the season listing him as their primary kick returner. With his injury history and just durability.
I noticed that too,
I would not be doing that, but I wonder if he's going to be the kick returner, like occasionally, or if that means every kick he's back there and they're trying to get him the ball.
I wonder. Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a, especially early, because I don't, you know, and we just had Kevin Sheehan on the Blitz. He's, yeah, I think Terry's going to be Terry in week one. I'm not convinced of that. And I know we've had a lot of discussion about that ad nauseum, but Debo's valuable for me throughout, but especially early on this season, because the rapport is there, the reps have been there, et cetera. If indeed Terry's on a pitch count, I don't know that I'd have him back there, because to your point, he's going to get returns. He's going to get looks. Maybe you do it like Gibbs used to do with Darryl Green. You know, what's a special occasion, we need the jolt. I'll have him back there, return the punt. Maybe you go, okay, tight game, fourth quarter. Let's run Debo back there. Kind of like that Santana Moss formula for those that you know, came around a bit later. Maybe it's that, but I don't know. I agree with the sentiment, though. Who would you rather have with the football in their hands with a little bit of space to move?
Looking at the Commanders' first depth chart of the season that they dropped today as part of their game notes that are coming out ahead of Sunday's matchup with the Giants, Luke McCaffrey was a kick returner and a punt returner at times last season. Because he's not listed as the primary kick returner, Debo Samuel, or the primary punt returner, Jalen Lane, backing up at both of those positions, I wonder if he's going to be active on game day. Right now, you'd have to say he's wide receiver 5, behind wide receiver 4, Jalen Lane, if Lane's the punt returner, and just based on Lane having had a better camp. But the three guys, clearly at that position, Terry McLaurin, Debo Samuel, Noah Brown, then you've got Lane. If Kane Medrano is up and on teams, which you'd imagine, or Ale Cajo, let's say, the other of the UCLA backers, undrafted, is up and playing on teams with Nick Ballore and some of the other guys at the position, if they really like their safety spot with special teamers, Percy Butler, Jeremy Reeves, Tyler Owens,
yeah.
Like, do you need a spare wide receiver on coverage units? I think there's a real chance in week one of his second season that McCaffrey could actually be deactivated.
I'm with you.
As
on
a
that.
Third round pick last year.
And again, I haven't written it down and done all the math about, you know, who's on what unit for coverage and different things like that. But if he's not going to be returning kicks, then you're right. I mean, maybe you go with 4 in that first week and have an extra body in the Cajo mold on, you know, to cover things.
The only thing I would say to that is just kind of playing devil's advocate of what we're both suggesting. Thinking out of the other side of the mouth here. In doing Take Command with Logan Paulson, which is the podcast, if you guys aren't familiar, that Logan and I do, it's very X's and O's intensive, and you know, we did a nice deep dive on a bunch of scheme stuff and how things could look different with some of their personnel changes in a pod that dropped today, so you can get that when we're done at thefandc.com or 106.7 The Fan's YouTube page to watch the show. But he made the case that when he went back last year, they used 6 receivers in like every single game. And his point is,
with tempo.
Tempo and no huddle. I mean, they had more no huddle than any team since the Eagles and
with Chip Kelly
last year. And because of the tempo, the fastest operating team in the league and the number of plays they run, receivers get tired running routes, even if it's just runs where they're blocking, like you get fatigued. And his point was you needed at least 5 and probably 6 to get through last season, even if 4 tight ends are up. The only thing they could do is, like, if they wanted to split Ben Senator, Colson Yankoff out for the rare time where you needed a 4th receiver or, you know, an extra receiver because everybody's tired, I guess you could do that. But maybe you keep Luke McCaffrey up just because of the tempo you operate with, and eventually you're going to have multiple receivers that ask out on a play, and if Noah Brown's dinged or something on that particular moment, now you need another wideout. But someone else would have to be deactivated at that point to make that work for McCaffrey, who's just going to stand around a lot.
So now you've got, you know, and they list Von Miller as an outside linebacker. Come on, defensive end. So it's really, there's 11 defensive linemen
there. We've talked about this. The only reason Von Miller's listed as an outside linebacker is because of the number he wears. You're not allowed to play defensive end as number 24. So they now technically have to list him as a linebacker because he's wearing the jersey number 24, which is stupid, and I hate everything about it, but it's actually a cool thing he's doing. Is he had a buddy in high school that got paralyzed, and the story behind the number 24, in addition to being a big Champ Bailey fan and some other things. But they have to list, like, they don't even list OLBs on their depth chart.
Yeah, so they just go, oh, he's not outside linebacker.
Yeah. So really, it's defensive end.
Yeah, right? So, but the point I'm trying to make is there's 11 guys there, right, that they kept on this 53. So that's Jacob Martin, that's Devontae John-Baptiste, now Eddie Goldman, Johnny Newton, Javon Kinlaw, Dorrance Armstrong, Dietrich Wise, Daron Payne, and then you add in Von Miller. Maybe one or two of those guys could be down, right, in terms of a game day, just to make sure that you've got 5. So
Baptiste, I'd say, yeah. Probably one of those
guys. Would be
guys
a candidate
for sure.
There. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, deep dive into the Commanders depth chart. Ross Tucker joins us next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Grant and Danny on The Fan, welcoming you back live from our Half Street studios. We're taking you up to 6:15 this evening. This is our NFL football week one extravaganza to kick things off. We are in the football mood. We're talking to some of our favorite NFL guests today and over the next few days. And one of those fellas joins us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's our guy Ross Tucker, who you'll see on CBS. He's all over the place. Ross Tucker's football show as well. Ross, how you been, man? Good to talk to you again.
I am fantastic. I'm happy to be part of the extravaganza. I'm ready to roll. I got Eagles-Cowboys in the Westwood One booth Thursday night with Kevin Harlan. Then I'll fly down to New Orleans, Arizona Cardinals, and the Saints for CBS on Sunday. So starting off with a doubleheader, boys.
So we'll go through both of those, but I actually wanted to start with Cowboys-Eagles. Your thoughts on what happened with Micah Parsons and kind of the Cowboys trying to pick up the pieces right away? And Danny and I were both higher on them before that trade than I think most, just thinking when Dak plays, they got a chance to win 10 games. Where are you on the gap between the Eagles, Commanders, and Dallas in the division right now?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's one of the worst trades I can ever remember. Because when you take into account everything, the timing of it, right? So if they had done this in March or April, I believe they would have gotten a lot better offers. You know, to do it for two first-round picks from the Packers, who might be the best team in the NFC now, you know, with Micah Parsons, so those picks are going to be late 20s, maybe 30s. It's just asinine. I mean, you think about how much time teams put in to the draft process to maybe someday hit it big and with, I think it was the 12th pick in the draft, get arguably the best defensive player in football. I mean, a generational defensive player with what he's able to do and how he's produced his first 4 years, and then you trade that guy? I mean, it's just – and then the week before the season, what kind of message does that send to your locker room? I mean, imagine being any of the vets in that Cowboys locker room, or Dak or CD. Like, the organization is screaming, we're not really trying to win. The reality is, guys – there really aren't that many guys that make a difference in wins and losses, right? I mean, you want to be as good as you can at every position, but there's probably five or six guys per team that really make a difference in the outcome of games, quarterbacks, of course, being the biggest. Micah Parsons is one of those guys. I mean, I do a betting podcast, the Even Money Betting Podcast, on Tuesdays, and, you know, my co-host is a handicapper. And he said Micah Parsons is worth 1.5 points on the betting line every week.
Wow.
That is a huge number for a non-quarterback. That's as high as you'll ever hear the number being for any non-quarterback. He makes that much of a difference. He basically made it from where I would have been with you guys and thought that the Cowboys had a puncher's chance with a healthy Dak and those receivers to win 9 or 10 games, so now I give them no chance to be a playoff contender. And conversely, if I thought the Packers were somewhere between second, third, or fourth team in the NFC, I now think they're like right there with the Eagles. I now put the Packers right up there at the top of the NFC along with the Philadelphia Eagles. I think they don't go for guys from other teams very often, like Reggie White, then they go to 2 Super Bowls, Charles Woodson. When the Packers see the opportunity to get a guy that is like a Super Bowl caliber difference-making player, they pounce, and that was a terrific trade for them.
Russ, let's go to your second game. I'm fascinated by Arizona. They're getting no attention. Everybody's got different darlings around the league, whether it's us here in Washington or Denver, et cetera. This is a group that finished 8-9 last year, but outscored their opponents. They had the 12th most points in football on offense and were middle of the pack on defense, lost a couple of close games. I don't have a great feel for that division either. I guess my question is, my voice is going to kind of go up, but is Arizona good?
I think Arizona is going to be good this year. I feel like we've said this before. 2 years ago, I can't even believe they won 4 games. That's how bad their roster was. And then last year, for them to go 8-9, that was a little bit disappointing because they were 6-4. The deal with them, though, guys, is Kyler Murray. I mean, I feel pretty confident that they probably have a double-digit win team around him now. He's just kind of consistently inconsistent. You know, Greg Cosell comes on my show, the Raw Sucker Podcast, every Thursday and Friday now this year, by the way. But he said he's the number one quarterback that he just hasn't been able to figure out. It's year 7, and on a week-to-week basis, the guy is either top 10 or bottom 10. He's never middle 10. He's like you need – I mean, last year, they're 6-4, and then he throws multiple picks in 3 out of the last 6 games to kind of shut the door on maybe sneaking in the playoffs last year. It's hard to put a finger on it. It's funny, talking to people in Arizona, Danny, they've kind of lowered expectations now. Like, after the way they finished last year, after the way Kyler finished, people are no longer thinking he could be a top 10 guy. You know, when you've been doing it for this long, I think the feeling is he kind of is what he is, which is to say probably always good enough that someone will make him a starter, but I don't know if you're ever really going to win playoff games with him.
Ross Tucker NFL on social. If you're not following him, it's a great account. You can get all of his content there. You should be. Hey, Ross, what about the – you know, of all the divisions right now, I think that are hardest to pick. I think the NFC North, AFC North are probably in that discussion. But the North now, with a Bears team, year one of Ben Johnson, you mentioned the Packers, Lions and Vikings, both juggernauts last year combined for 29 wins and 5 losses. How do you see that division going?
Yeah, and you're right. In the sense, I think they're both very competitive divisions, but I feel very strongly about the Baltimore Ravens and the AFC North. You know, the Bengals can improve their defense, but they can't improve it that much. And the Ravens, there are so many metrics out there. Like, the Ravens last year were one of the best regular season teams we've ever seen. You know, when you look at, like, their yards per play, their defense allowed yards per play, they just figure out how to doink off games they shouldn't, and then they can't get it done in the playoffs. And then the NFC North, I like the Packers. You know, I think losing 2 coordinators is a major, major challenge for Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions. And then, you know, you lose Frank Ragnow. That's big, guys. I mean, center is critically important, not just the physical part, but the mental part. Ragnow was like a Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber player that they no longer have. So I suspect the Lions take a little bit of a step back. Now, they would tell you, and maybe rightfully so, that they're healthier on defense. But I feel pretty good about the Ravens and the Packers as the 2 teams in those divisions.
AFC West, does Denver overtake Kansas City, given all their fortune last year? Kansas City's still really good, obviously. I wouldn't want to play them in the postseason. But is there a chance that Denver finally jumps up and beats them and takes that reign?
Well, there's people that feel that way, and certainly Denver looks poised to take the next step. You know, I mentioned the Even Money Betting podcast, but he has said 2 weeks in a row that he likes, it's kind of a long shot bet, but he likes the Broncos to win the division. The issue I have with that is I think the Chiefs are going to be better this year. Now, I don't think they'll win as many games because this streak of winning every one-score game is going to end. I mean, they're going to lose a couple of one-score games this year. So that's going to end. But, I mean, they're going to have most of the year with Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Rashee Rice after his suspension. Everybody's telling me, multiple people, that this is the best shape Kelsey's been in the last couple of years. I think he really wants to kind of finish his career on a high note. So he was training in Florida all off season. I think they're better at left tackle with the rookie Simmons than they had been in recent years. So I think the Broncos might be able to give them a run for their money, but I guess I would say I'll believe that they actually overtake the division when I see it.
Our guy, Ross Tucker. Hey, Ross, before I let you go, kind of a random question, but last time we had you on last football season in January, you were working with this place called futurefans.com, and you hooked me up with them, and I got my kids a kit for the playoffs into the Super Bowl, and they loved it, and it was a way for them to kind of get engaged in the game. Are you doing anything with them this year?
I am, yeah, and you even texted me to say that your kids were all about it. You know what's crazy? And I hope you guys see this in the ratings, you can feel this. The best market right now in terms of futurefans.com, which is a great way to get your kids to learn and understand football and actually watch the games with you. The best market I go in right now and people make the orders is the DMV. It's you guys. It's DC. So if I do any type of Commanders podcast, anything around the Commanders and DC football right now is just so hot, which I'm excited for you guys. I'm excited for everybody in the area, obviously, with Jaden Daniels. How could you not be? So if you wanted to be like back in the day when you would sit there and watch the Skins with your dad and you want your kids to have that same experience with you, check out futurefans.com because these guys have absolutely cracked the code on how to get, if you got young kids, how to get them to learn, understand football, and really, you know, want to watch the games. Because you guys know with iPads and everything, it is hard. These guys figured it out. You can see how they did it at futurefans.com. It's only $60. They got a discount right now. Make sure your son or daughter is along for the ride this season.
Ross, you're the best, buddy. Always love catching up, dude. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, see you guys as well.
Ross Tucker with us on Grant and Danny. I told you about that. I got my kids the kit
for the Super Bowl,
and they really thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'll have to link back up and do that again to kick off the season. All right, speaking of kicking off, more kickoff changes, more rule changes in the NFL. Let's get to the bottom of it all today as we preview the upcoming campaign. Mike Pereira, rules expert, joining us live next right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.